Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Rini. Welcome to Rini's Heart to Heart. This morning we're going to talk about something that I think hurts all of us in one way or another. Sometimes it's touched our lives. Sometimes it's just because we read the news and we watch television. Sometimes it's because we know of it personally. And it's child abuse. Yesterday morning and this morning, there were things all over the news about another man who's just been arrested for molesting and abusing children, preteens, tweens, that age kids. And this we see almost every single day, which is incredibly disheartening and makes you worry more and more about what kind of people are out there. I'll never forget the first time I realized that when my kids left the house in the morning, there was every possibility, even in school, waiting at the bus stop, at any point in time, they could meet somebody that wanted to do harm to them. It was really hard for me to come to grips with. I was a young mom. And I was not nearly as aware of things as I am now, but I was aware. And a couple things happened in the small town that we lived in and that came to light. And I thought to myself, gosh, you know, when you send your kids out in the morning, you can't really depend on the fact that they're going to be safe all day. And some of the people that they come in contact with that you think are there for them are often the predator. So yesterday when I was thinking about the different things that we've done shows about, and of course we've touched on child abuse and we've touched on lots of stories about bullying and the fact that a lot of kids get bullied at home before they ever get bullied at school, which is a source of child abuse. So I did some research last night, and I remember hearing old stories when I was a kid. I never knew whether they were true or whether something some mom made up one day to scare the kids and make them understand that you should stay away from strangers. But the truth of the matter is there's been more violence done to a child by their own parents than any other outsider. And that's what bothers me the most. It's one thing to be able to say to a child, you know, don't get in the car with a stranger. Don't talk to a stranger. I'm talking about, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old. Don't do this and don't do that. And if somebody stops by and asks you if you want a ride, you say no, thank you. And what they teach now is if somebody comes after you, scream as loud as you can and make sure everybody knows that somebody's trying to take you against your will. But the truth of the matter is, many, many times, it's happening in their own home, and it's happening with somebody that they love and have always trusted. So it made me go back and do some research, and I found a writing by an author, and I don't want to read the whole thing. It's very large, but I put it in my documents so that I could save it and go back to it every now and then, because this doctor did a lot of research. And of course, child abuse and neglect and mistreatment of children goes way, way, way back. His studies started in the 1800s. I'm going to bring Shelley in so that I can leave my dashboard and be able to have her in so that she can hear what I'm going to read on this report. And then we're going to talk about it a little bit. But I want everybody to understand that this is your responsibility. If you know something is going on with a kid someplace, anywhere, even if it's in your own home, if you're turning a blind eye, you're as responsible as the perpetrator. Remember that. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. As I was just saying to everybody, I found this very interesting article, and I want to read it to everybody, and I want everybody to understand, you know, exactly what's going on out there and how long it's been going on. That's what blew me away, was this article that I found started way back. And he touches base on lots of different things. Now all I have to do is find it, because I put it in with all my documents and I didn't flag it or anything. So I have to locate it here. It's hard to talk and read at the same time for me. I'm not multitasking yet this early in the morning.
Did you, when you found this article, is it something that was written currently that talks about, like, past incidences? Or is it something that was written a long time ago?
It was something that was written a very, very long time ago. And like I said, it kind of was like, gosh, you've got to be kidding. Of course, you know that. We know that there's been things going on forever, ever, ever. But
I think the fact is that a lot of what we see today happening to children has been happening all along, but it's just that, you know, people were more secretive, you know, 50 mm-hmm. years ago, you know. Whatever happened within a family stayed within a family. You know, there wasn't so much media and news coverage. So families, a lot of times, young people just didn't realize that what was happening to them wasn't happening to everybody else, you know, so they didn't talk about it. But mm-hmm. now with the media and there's so much information about this, children at very younger ages are able to now discern that what's happening to them isn't right and that they can get help.
Mm-hmm. Well, this guy, I mean, you know, like he researched just about everything and really went into detail about all the things that he found. I cannot believe I can't find it this morning. I just put it on last night, and it's not. Let me see if I put it in this one. No. Should be in my documents, but it's not coming up. He, like I said, he started this in the 1800s. He went back to the 1800s. And, of course, there was a time, when if you had a child that was suffering in some way, either had problems learning or anything like that, they held them. They'd hide them in the basement.
Wow.
I mean, you know, he talks about how many times he found out things that were, you know, like were really awful. And, okay, well, I'm not finding it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and see if I can locate it the other way. But like I said, it's very, very long. And he's got all kinds of information on it that you know, isn't really pertinent to what we, you know, what we're going to talk about today. But there are some interesting facts that he put in it that I thought was pretty interesting. But what I did find out is that April is supposed to be Child Abuse Prevention Month, and because
April?
Of that. April. Mm-hmm. And because of that, there's a lot of things that get put out around that time of year. So hopefully I'll keep this in my notes, and in April we will go back into checking out some of the things that this guy has gotten written. Let me see if this is... This might be it. But The History of Child Abuse by Lloyd DeMaus, the Journal of Psychohistory. Now, this one is different, but this one's, I looked at this one as well. And this one is kind of sad. I wasn't going to read this one because it's personal, and it's kind of hurtful. But because I can't find the other one, I will touch on this. Let me get back up to the beginning here. These things are really long. Every one that I found. This speech was given at the National Parenting Conference in Boulder, Colorado in 1977. And this man, Lloyd DeMaus, for 30 years, he spent a lot of times reading diaries, autobiographies, doctor's reports, ethnographic reports, and other documents that document what must have felt like to have been a child yesterday and today in the East and the West, literate and pre-literate cultures. In several hundred studies published by himself and by other associates, we've provided extensive evidence that the history of childhood has been a nightmare from which we have only recently begun to awaken. The further back in history one goes and the further away from the West one gets, the more massive the neglect and cruelty one finds, and the more likely children are to have been killed, rejected, beaten, terrorized, and sexually abused by their caretakers. I'm not going to read all that. The main psychological mechanism that operates in a child abuse involves using children as what I have termed poison containers, receptacles into which adults projected disowned parts of their own psyches so that they can control these feelings in another body without danger to themselves. In good parenting, the child uses the caretaker as a poison container. Much as it earlier used the mother's placenta as a poison container for cleansing its polluted blood, a good mother reacts with calming actions to the cries of a baby and helps it detoxify. It's dangerous emotions, but when an immature mother's baby cries, she cannot stand the screaming and strikes out at the child. As one battering mother put it, "I have never felt loved all my life. When the baby was born, I thought he would love me. When he cried, it meant he didn't love me, so I hit him." Rather than the child being able to use the parent to detoxify its fears and anger, the parent instead injects his or her bad feelings into the child and uses it to cleanse his or herself of depression and anger. Wow, this is pretty deep. Maternal incest and by men or women, that doesn't make sense. Maternal would be the mother. Maternal incest, and pederasty by men are quite common in pre-literate groups and were common in earlier historical times. Boys in many New Guinea groups today, for instance, are so traumatized by the early erotic experiences, neglect, and assaults on their bodies that they need to prove their masculinity when they grow up and become fierce warriors and cannibals, with a third of them dying in raids and wars. In fact, I have found that rather than the incest taboo being universal, as anthropologists claim, it is incest itself that has been universal for most children in most cultures in most times. Jeez. A childhood more or less free from adult sexual abuse is, in fact, a very late historical achievement, limited to a few fortunate children in a few modern nations. To give you some idea of the extensive evidence I have gathered for such an unlikely conclusion, I would like to begin by summarizing the evidence which exists for the sexual abuse of children around the world today. I don't want to read all this. It's too awful. What I'm perusing while I'm talking, it's really, really too awful. Suffice it to say that what we think today because of media coverage is something that has happened because of the way we've become insensitive to provocative television, provocative reading material, provocative magazines and everything has actually existed since the very beginning. And according to this psychiatric evaluation, it's because of our own, as parents and adults, our own internal sickness, problems, inability to feel like we're loved unless we're getting some kind of, I don't know, almost like a sexual release. So according to this, years ago, and I remember reading about this, and I think we read about this very, very early on in the show when we talked about AIDS one day. We talked about the bathhouses that were set up in big cities many, many years ago. Do you remember when we talked about that, Shell?
Not so much the bath. I remember us talking about AIDS. I'm not remembering the bathhouses, though.
Well, the bathhouses were about, you know, they apparently became, you know, big way back when, and they were, you know, eroticized for people, and it wasn't just homosexuality. It was men and women, men and men, women and women. And they also report that 80% of Near Eastern women surveyed recalled having been forced into some kind of sexual act by the ages of 3 to 6 by older brothers, cousins, uncles, and teachers. And they rarely complain because, you know, it was... it seemed like it was extra attention in some cases. It seemed like it was something that was just done by everybody, so it was accepted by these little girls. Arab women and some cultures like that actually had, once they gave birth to daughters, it was understood that the daughter would be a gift to the husband in some cases.
Wow.
Yeah, and well, it goes into some really horrific, Jesus, some really horrific stuff here. I'm not going to read this on the air. What I'd like for any of you to do, if you're struggling with something like this in your life, perhaps get on the internet and have a look and see how far this has gone through the ages. In the United States, we're the youngest nation, so we are not quite as, I don't know, I guess the only word I can think of is deviant as some of these older countries are, England, Arabians, people like this that have been around forever. And, of course, royalty. Royalty was known for the things that they did to young women, especially beautiful young women. So, again, it's not new, very sadly. It's too bad, but it's really about a lot of really awful, awful stuff. So I'm not going to read it. But it is available to you if you look up the history of child abuse. You'll find that through the years, and it's only been in the last century or so that we've done anything to make it any better. Throughout history, children have been subjected to extensive physical abuse, sexual abuse, psychological abuse, and neglect. It's only in recent decades that the legislation and organizations have been established in order to combat child abuse and advocate for children's rights. Today, many organizations have been created in order to prevent children from suffering from maltreatment and protect them from abuse and neglect. However, throughout most of our history, child abuse was accepted, and in many cases, it was even encouraged. Many child abuse cases make this recent shift in social perception evident by the leniency that is often granted to individuals who have been subjected to who have subjected a child to abuse. Individuals who inflict abuse or neglect upon a child may leave the child with irreversible psychological and social effects. The child who has suffered from abuse may maintain permanent disabilities and may never, ever lead a normal life. If you need legal advice and assistance, please contact a child abuse lawyer. However, in many cases, a child abuser is not subjected to adequate punishment for their crimes. As time has progressed, child abuse has grown to receive more attention and is beginning to be recognized as a severe and extremely detrimental epidemic. However, much more time, research, and energy needs to be focused on preventing child abuse in order to assist with this. The month of April has been designated National Child Abuse Month. Child abuse is in no way a recent development, which, of course, we've already found out. Children have been suffering from maltreatment around the world for thousands of years. The social perception of child abuse and neglect has changed a great deal over time. What used to be considered acceptable behavior is no longer legally or socially permissible. Well, you know, we can go back just in our time and to be beaten with a stick or a switch or a paddle. It didn't happen to me. I'm sure it didn't happen to Shelley. But I do think that it happened to our grandparents on a regular basis. And if my grandparents were alive today, they would be in their, they would be like 110. That is probably the truth. And when school started, and mostly boys went to school, not girls. Girls were taught to stay home and, you know, take care of the home. Very often they weren't even allowed to go to school. Boys got paddled and beat in school on a regular basis. And I think I can remember in my time, and as we all know, I'm rapidly approaching 65, this has taken place in my lifetime, that a teacher cannot strike a child. So some of the things that we talk about today that we, you know, that we get very upset about, when the night that we watched the video and talked about the teacher that watched the kid being dragged around the classroom and actually participated a little bit in the beating of this child, this used to be commonplace. So as far as we've come, obviously we've not come far enough, but we need to understand that this is something that's been going on and, believe it or not, apparently is getting better. Throughout history, subjecting a child to physical abuse, sexual abuse, psychological abuse, and neglect has been condoned and in some cases even encouraged. Children were commonly exploited and used for advancement of parents or adults. Historically, children were given few or no rights, that's still true, and still true of women, very sadly. We've talked about that before. And were often considered to be insignificant or unimportant. In many cases, children were subjected to cruel and unusual treatment and were offered little or no protection from abuse and exploitation. It took many years for child abuse prevention organizations to be established and much longer for various countries to institute laws which condemn child abuse and neglect. Since early history, the social perception of children and child abuse has been altered a great deal. Even within the last few decades, public opinion regarding child abuse and aggressive discipline has changed drastically. Although child abuse still occurs today, the views and opinions of children and child abuse are not the same as they were in the past. Well, I guess we can say thank God for that. Child abuse cases are often extremely heartbreaking and disturbing. These cases often detail the horrific conditions that children are forced to endure. These tales of physical abuse, sexual abuse, psychological abuse, and neglect are unbelievable and astonishing. They leave many individuals wondering how any person could possibly subject a child to these atrocities. In many cases, the individual who is responsible for inflicting maltreatment upon a child is one or both of the child's parents. These parents force their children to live in unthinkable conditions and deprive their children of basic necessities until they are only moments away from death. The children who manage to survive this extensive abuse and neglect may be permanently mentally and or physically disabled. Many of the children who are rescued from homes in which they experienced regular abuse and neglect will never have the ability to live a normal life and may need to be provided with constant care. The most disturbing part of many of these child abuse cases is the punishment that the abusers receive. In many instances, a child abuser will destroy a child's life. However, they will escape with only having to serve a few years in prison. In some cases, an individual who is responsible for subjecting a child to abuse will not receive any punishment at all. So, I think this is very, very scary. And there's for those of you who don't know about some of the things that are out there. Now there are separate departments in our court system for juveniles versus adults. There are many organizations set up to protect children. However, the bad part about it is if you're a kid and somebody is in charge of what you do and what you don't do, you have very little hope of getting out and getting away, especially if it is your birth parents that are responsible for this. I would like to think that it's better, but everything that I'm seeing here today tells me that it is apparently not much better. Apparently, it's just more well guarded, and people don't know when it's going on in somebody's home. So what do you think about all this, Shell? You got any input on any of this? I could read a lot more, but it's horrific. It's really it's really disheartening. I'd rather try to find some stuff that is going to help us figure out where to tell people to go for the help. What do you think?
Well, I think my immediate reaction is that I think now, and I think throughout history, the majority of people have had a very loving and benevolent relationship with their children and a very nurturing, I think it's our basic nature to be nurturing to children. I think that there was an insensitivity amongst like lawmakers and things like that, where if someone wasn't nurturing and abusive to their child, they didn't feel that there was anything wrong with that, because children and women, which you said a few minutes ago, really had no rights. It was a very, very chauvinistic type of society, very patriarchal, where the man ruled the roost. And so when men started perpetrating violence, either against their wives or against their children, it was actually legalized at some point, where they actually made rules about, how much a man could beat his wife or how much a man could beat his kids or whatever. They actually made, laws regarding that. But I think that, and I hope I'm right about this, but I think that we're talking about a smaller portion of society. Now, I know culturally that may not be the case when you're talking about certain cultures that treat their children certain ways. But I'm talking about, like more in Western civilization, where I believe the majority of people have always had nurturing relationships. And I think that's why we do have a lot of people that just instinctively, know how to treat children better, or look to them, or treat them with respect, or treat them in a nurturing way and help them grow up. The prevalence of this, though, is shocking, that it's so widespread, that it's so, that like you said, up until recent times, a lot of this wasn't even illegal. I mean, that fact in itself is shocking, that it has taken humanity so long to recognize that this is something that should be illegal
not just that it's immoral or that it's not a good thing to happen, but that this is a crime, you know, to treat any other human being, whether they be a different sex than you or a different religion or younger than you or somebody older than you. Any time you're mistreating another human being, it is a crime. It's not should be a crime. It is a crime, period. And thank God that in the modern age, people are, you know, coming in touch with that reality more and more, that sensitivity, that realization, and becoming less and less tolerant of violence and things like that being perpetrated. But I am shocked that it's as widespread as it was. I didn't expect to hear some of the facts you read in the article. I know you weren't even reading all of them.
No, I couldn't read some of it.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things, though, that I picked up on, and I almost can get this, way back when laws weren't what they were today and bureaucracy wasn't what it is today. I mean, we bitch about that stuff all the time. But the truth of the matter is there was a time when if you gave birth to a child, it was your possession.
Mm-hmm.
To do with as you pleased.
Yep.
And as a man, if you chose a wife, she was your possession. That's the way the world was back then.
Right.
And if you were in royalty somehow, you could choose as many wives as you wanted. They were there for your pleasure, period.
Mm-hmm.
Not there to be your second half, not there to be your helper, not there to be your partner, there to be something that you played with, like a toy.
Well, in royalty,
and many times,
a lot of the, well, in royalty,
I know what you're going to say, they were young.
Well, yes, partly they were young, but the other part of it was that they didn't marry for love. They married for bloodline. Most of the marriages were arranged, and so they weren't marrying for love anyway. So there was just, you know, there wasn't the bond where you see where somebody falls in love and they get married and they want to create a life together. That's not what this was all about. This was all about obligation, responsibility, arrangement, making sure that this bloodline married into that bloodline to keep everything pure, you know, the old pure blood. That's where that whole thing
mm-hmm.
came from. So when you're talking about royalty, it's a totally, you know, that's where a lot of the incest came from, because they were trying to maintain bloodlines.
But even that was something else. And in many cases, there was not even a friendship there. It was just paperwork.
Exactly. Right.
And
right.
Exactly. So in the meantime, they could have a bevy, if you will, of females, very, very young in most cases, who were there for their beck and call. So,
mm-hmm.
but, and this opened the door because they set the temperature. So this opened the door to commoners, so to speak, to behave the same way. So it became an accepted way of life. Wife beating. I watched an old movie the other day, and it was about, you know, a small town, Midwestern town, farms and stuff like that. And if your wife did anything, like an animal, you know, she was beaten, she was left to not eat. Lots of horrible things happened to her if she didn't do what was expected of her. If a husband came home after being out driving cattle or working the farm or doing something and came home and dinner wasn't appropriate or wasn't ready yet or anything, it was expected that she was going to get beaten. So,
wow.
It's hard to believe we're better because we're still so atrocious, but we are a lot better. And, of course, today marriage and family is supposed to be more of a partnership, more of an equality, and more of a safe place. I mean, that's what we talk about all the time. But for many, many years, it wasn't. It was man ruled the world, and wives and children were his possessions to do with as he saw fit. Do you know that they had animal cruelty laws before they had laws like that for children, Shelley?
Yes, yes.
I mean, can you believe that?
Well, the reason, well, do you know why that happened? You know why animal cruelty laws came out before? Because
no.
Descartes, who, this is one of the things that I have been researching, Descartes, who probably would have been a serial killer if he didn't become a vivisector, was crazy. But he had the whole scientific community fooled because of the way he spoke. He was like an insane genius, you know. And he would go into these schools and teach. Well, he experimented on the animals at home, in his house. He would have all these animals that had these horrible procedures done to them, and they'd be laying around in his home, in his basement, without any care. And his wife and his daughter became so enraged that they actually started animal protection against him. That was the first
really?
Animal protection, and then it just spread, yeah. So that's why that happened, because his family that he subjected to.
And what
to what
era was that, Shelley? What era
was that?
What?
That was like in the 1800s.
Uh-huh.
That he was considered the father of vivisection, and like I said, and I'm not going to go into it on the show. It's a topic for another show, possibly. But what he did to these animals was horrific.
Well, that's like the island of Dr. Moreau. Same idea. Remember the movie The Island of Dr. Moreau, where he mixed animals and people. Do you remember that movie?
I know of the movie. I've never seen it.
Well, it's gross. I mean, you know, I've seen several remakes of it, but that's what it was about.
Well,
and of course, eventually.
Yeah, he wasn't doing stuff like that, but what he was doing, what vivisection is surgery on conscious animals. So and then they're left unattended to recover from whatever he did to them. But he was constantly doing surgeries and procedures to these animals, and then they were allowed to languish suffering, and his wife and his daughter couldn't handle it, and they ended up starting this and they were very outspoken. And the fact that they were railing against, you know, their own family member really got attention from the newspapers and things like that. And they're the ones that started. And then they got a lot of other people who had sensitivities in that regard to camp on to them. But that's why that happened. I guess child abuse was something behind the scenes. It wasn't recognized. If he had been beating the daughter, the wife probably would have started something that against children, because evidently she was a very strong woman to rail against her husband, because it just wasn't done then. But she was just absolutely incensed by what he was doing to these animals, and the fact that she perceived at one point that there was something not quite right with him, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, well, that sounds for sure. Well, this one of these things that I had looked at last night, I just brought up the there's a legal classification of a child, and a child or a minor is defined as an individual who is below the age of legal adulthood, although the stipulations correlating to minors vary by locational statutes. But a minor is allowed the same legal and human rights as an adult. However, specific activities exist in which the participation of children is forbidden. The prohibition of child participation is considered to result from a legal analysis in which activity presumed to require a heightened sense of maturity and growth specific to legal adulthood. Obviously, they're talking about sex. So that's how they came up with, you know, the different rape laws and things like that, or statutory rape, or all the other legal. This site is all done by lawyers, and it's kind of tenuous, I think, because it's about, you know, what they can make fit And it's not true everywhere, like they just said. It's true in accordance to what's going on, you know, where there's any kind of laws being broken. Mostly in the United States, we're pretty much the same, but it would be other countries that there would be difference. I do think, though, like I said, that if we talk about something like this, what's scary to me is that everything that we talk about on this show has to do with treating each other better. And every time we talk about perpetrators, and like I said earlier in the show, when I talked about the first time I realized that when my kids left the house, I couldn't be sure that some nice man was really a nice man, or that some nice lady was really a nice lady, maybe just a good actor or actress, and they would hurt my children if they had the opportunity. And coming to that realization was really scary for me. And I always think about outsiders. The point I'm trying to make today is that in many cases, and I guess predominantly, the cases involve somebody that child belongs to. A parent, an older brother, an uncle. I mean, everything I read last night and this morning talks about family is almost always first. And just like, you know, if you read about horrific murders and things like that, almost always perpetrated by somebody who's got a lot of emotions involved in the whole scenario, which is a big part of why things happen to begin with, because, you know, there's too much emotions when you have a family that is not functioning the way they should be.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in this, let me see this, within the institution of children's rights, the following rights and freedoms are considered to be entitlements to children whose protection and advocacy is the responsibility of the governing body of the country or nation of residence. Children's rights state that children are entitled to the protection and defense from any and all activities that are considered to place their respective livelihood, well-being, and safety in jeopardy. Circumstances and activities believed to compromise a child's mental and physical health are considered to be in direct violation of children's rights. This includes all forms of child abuse. Children's rights ensure that children will be provided with environments in which they are free from subjection to neglect and exploitation. These provisions include the instatement of sufficient qualities of life, medical and mental health care, support, counseling, and education. Furthermore, these provisions include the availability of sufficient shelter, food, and water. Children's rights mandate that children will be given access to organized programs and activities provided within their respective communities and environments, which allow them to undertake services and resources, including libraries, group activities, and organized programs. Shelley, does this sound incredibly antiquated to you?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, it's another one of those things that was designed, it doesn't give me a date when they finally founded, I could probably find it somewhere, but it's not in this article. But, you know, within the scope of children's right, there exists the institution of juvenile rights, which are defined as activities and engagements within which children are prohibited. This prohibition is not considered to be an expression of prejudice or violation, but an act of protection from activities considered to be reserved for individuals classified as legal and self-sufficient adults. Such activities include prohibition of children from engaging in or being in any way participatory in construction or endorsement of a legal contract. Oh, you and I had that discussion many years ago, didn't we? The participation in sexual activity, regardless of consent, the purchase or usage of controlled substances such as tobacco, alcohol, or firearms. So that's pretty, it's pretty small article on what they can and what they can't do, but I guess it covers everything. It's, and of course, in most of your states, in the court system, there are advocates for children that work almost like a public defender. And the children's advocacy program is usually extended to schools. There's usually somebody that pays a visit to a school or to even to churches to let kids know who they can talk to if they need to. Now, whether or not I ask my kids, my teenagers, if anybody's ever come in and talked to them about, you know, if everything is all right at your house or everything isn't all right at your house. Only one teenager told me he remembers being having somebody come in and do a big meeting in the cafeteria that said, you know, if you feel unsafe or you feel like somebody's not treating you the way you need to be treated, you can come talk to me after this meeting. And I also asked him if any kids went up, and he said, yeah, but only like three or four. So, again, one of the things I'd like to mention about that is open forums when you're talking to kids and letting everybody see who walks up later is a bad idea. Because kids aren't going to do that.
I had the exact same reaction. The minute you said that, that's exactly where my mind went.
Well, I mean, you know, it would seem like if you're in that genre, you would understand that that's really not going to work, that you have to, you know, has to be a lot more private than that. We will remember, though, in April, and we will discuss this a lot more in regard to what's going on, and if there's anything new by April in regard to this, I will keep an eye on these different sites. One of the stories that I read last night was awful. It was about Mary Ellen Wilson, and she was born in 1864 in the United States of America. And she died at a very ripe old age. She didn't die until 1956, so she lived to be quite old. But there is a picture of her as a child, and she had been abused so much that somebody got involved. I don't remember the names. I'm going to pull it up real quick so I can explain to people how awful it was for kids back in those days. 1864 to 1956, or sometimes Mary Ellen McCormick was an American whose case of child abuse led to the creation of the New York Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. As an 8-year-old, she was severely abused by her foster parents, Francis and Mary Connolly. Mary Ellen was born to Francis and Thomas Wilson of Hell's Kitchen in New York City. Upon Thomas's death, Frances had to take a job and was no longer able to stay home and raise her infant daughter. She boarded her daughter with a woman named Mary Score, a common practice at the time. When Frances Wilson's financial situation worsened, she began to miss her visitation dates with her daughter and was no longer able to make child care payments to the lady taking care of her. Score turned Mary Ellen, now almost 2, into a New York Department of Charities. The department placed Mary Ellen under the care of Mary Connolly and Thomas McCormick. According to Mary Connolly's court testimony, Thomas McCormick, Mary Connolly's first husband, claimed to be Mary Ellen Wilson's biological father. The Department of Charities placed Mary Ellen into the McCormick's care illegally, without the proper papers or receipts served. Thomas McCormick signed an indenture Everybody remembers what indentured means, right? Agreement upon retrieving Mary Ellen from the Department of Charities care, but did not explain his or his wife's relationship with the child to the Commissioner of Charities and Correction. The McCormicks were required to report the child's condition annually to the department. But according to Mary Conley's later court testimony, this only occurred once or twice during Mary Ellen's stay. Shortly after Mary Ellen came to stay in the McCormicks' care, Thomas McCormick died. Mary McCormick married Francis Connolly, moving together with Mary Ellen to an apartment on West 41st Street. It was at this address that neighbors first became aware of young Mary Ellen's mistreatment. When the Connollys moved into a new address, one of the concerned neighbors from their 41st Street apartment asked Etta Angel Wheeler, a Methodist missionary who worked in the area, to check on the child. Wheeler, under the pretext of asking Mrs. Connolly's help in caring for Connolly's new neighbor, the chronically ill and homebound Mary Smith, gained access to the Connolly's apartment to see Mary Ellen's state for herself. When Mrs. Wheeler saw evidence of physical abuse, malnourishment, and neglect in Mary Ellen's condition, Wheeler began to research legal options to redress and protect the young girl. After finding the local authorities reluctant to act upon the child cruelty laws currently in place, and this was in the 1800s, Wheeler turned to a local advocate for the Animal Humane Movement and the founder of the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, Henry Berg. With the help of neighbors' testimony, Wheeler and Berg successfully removed Mary Ellen from the Connolly home and took Mary Connolly to trial. The deliberate cruelties and deprivations inflicted on Mary Ellen Wilson by her adopted parents included the following: regular and severe beatings, insufficient food, being forced to sleep on the floor, having no warm clothes to wear in cold weather, being frequently left alone inside a darkened, locked room, being forbidden to go outdoors except at night in her own yard. The child testified in court regarding the abuse she had suffered and afterward on April 10, 1874. My mother and father are both dead. I don't know how old I am. I have no recollection of a time when I did not live with the Connollys. Mama has been in the habit of whipping and beating me almost every day. She used to whip me with a twisted whip, a rawhide. The whip always left black and blue marks on my body. I have now the black and blue marks on my head, which were made by Mama, and also a cut on the left side of my forehead, which was made by a pair of scissors. She struck me with the scissors and cut me. I have no recollection of ever having been kissed by anyone. Have never been kissed by my mama. I have never been taken on my mama's lap and caressed or petted. I never dared to speak to anybody because if I did, I would get whipped. I do not know for what I was whipped. Mama never said anything to me when she whipped me. I do not want to go back to live with Mama because she beats me so. I have no recollection ever being on the street in my life. And this woman that did this to this little girl was sentenced to jail for 1 year. That year, the New York Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children was founded and first organization of its kind. Following the conviction of Mary Connolly, Mary Ellen was initially placed in a juvenile home before Etta Wheeler and her relatives successfully obtained custody of her. In 1888, at age 24, Mary Ellen married Louis Schutt. They had two children together. Schutt had three children from his previous marriage, and they later adopted an orphaned girl. Mary Ellen died in 1956 at the age of 92. So this story, the pictures are horrific. There's a little girl standing. They must have taken a picture of her when they first brought her in, and she has cuts all over her, and she's like maybe 3.5 feet tall, and a big scar down the right side of her face. But she obviously, because she survived, and I'm sure that there were many that did not. That's what is so distressing, is when you know that somebody like this survives and they do, you know, it makes that many changes. You have to know that the adults in the world at that point in time understood that this was going on in many, many different places. They wouldn't have done all this work because of one little girl. So
right.
In that
well,
point
the whole
in time...
thing is,
go ahead, honey.
Well, what I was going to say is that one of the things that they got my attention with this case is that she grew up to get married, have children all around her. She even adopted another child. She married a man who had children already. So she went to the other extreme. In other words, she wasn't one of these abused people that grew up to be an abuser. So it looks like the fact that another adult or adults, plural, came in to her rescue, and she must have seen that kindness and grew up. And you know, at 8 years old, she recognized what was being done to her was wrong. She didn't think she deserved it. She recognized it wasn't the right way to treat a child, and then allowed herself to be positively impacted by the other adults that came in to get her out of that situation. So that's mm-hmm. why doing the right thing and stopping this abuse. I don't agree with the gentleman who said that once a child is abused, they're damaged for life. I believe the impact can last them a lifetime, but I don't believe that their lives have to be ruined. I believe that if the proper people step in and show them the proper type of caring and nurturing and positive and help them to heal from the relationship, that they can grow up to then be loving and nurturing in other relationships on their own.
Oh, I do too. Absolutely. And I think that was an unfortunate choice of words for that statement, because I agree with you. And it's hard for me to believe that anybody that works in an arena like this with kids and everything doesn't know that firsthand. So maybe that was just, you know, an unfortunate choice of words, the way he put that, because I thought that to myself too, because we react so quickly, even as adults, honey, we react so quickly to warmth and love, don't we? Every one of us?
Yes. Well, I mean, I do know people that are very, very damaged that don't, that almost reject. It's almost like they're uncomfortable with that type of positive treatment. In fact, I know somebody right now who's like that. And so, and a lot of times I wonder whatever happened to this individual that makes them so resistant to kindness. And they're almost better off when you're being nasty to them. So obviously something happened to this individual, and they never learned how to deal with kindness. They probably never showed it when they were younger. So I do believe that it can have impact on the adult person. So that's why I was saying it depends on when it comes into that person who's being abused, like at what age it comes to them, and how consistent it is, and do they help them deal with, do they help the individual understand that what was being done to them was wrong, it's not the way the world is, and here there's a better way to live, and that they can accept affection and things like that. So I know that children are very resilient, but then they have to have that person to kind of guide them through that healing process.
Well, that's for sure, but I think you're right, and I do believe that I think it depends on the severity, the inner core of somebody, how much they could take, how much they couldn't take. There's all kinds of extenuating circumstances for any scenario like this, no matter who you're talking about. But I do believe that most of us, and you're right, there are some that are that can't get past some of their memories and some of their feelings, but most of us respond to love, most of us. And an opportunity to give somebody enough love so that they can respond to it is a gift. If you get that opportunity, you should take advantage of it.
Yes.
We're almost out of time. Tomorrow we will be doing a recap. And we are going to do, I'm going to give everybody an update on what I've got on my sheet for next week. We're going to talk about sleep apnea. We're going to talk about cancer. We're going to talk about eating disorders. We're going to talk about AIDS again. And we're going to talk about high school sports. So if anybody has any input on any of those topics, please let me know. I love to hear from people, and a lot of you contact me on Facebook, and that's awesome. Do that whenever you'd like to. But everybody go out there and have a great day today. I hope everybody saw the moon last night, the harvest moon. It was just absolutely beautiful. So God bless everybody. Have a great day. Thanks, Shel. I'll talk to you later today.
Yes, Renee. All right, everyone have a beautiful day, and take care, Renee. I'll speak to you in a while.
All right, dear. Bye-bye.